Hey, everyone. Good morning, and thank you for joining our 46th annual Growth Conference here at Canaccord Genuity. I'm George Gianarikas, one of our sustainability analysts, and we're very pleased, happy, excited to have Mobileye with us here today. Presenting from the company is Dan Galves, Chief Communications Officer. Dan, thanks for joining us.
George, appreciate it.
So let's start from the top. Just maybe talking about the day-to-day business. Customer inventory adjustments come and go. And so can you just sort of give us an update as to where Mobileye is today from a customer inventory perspective?
Yeah. So I think our inventories are held generally at our Tier 1 customers, and we're around 5 weeks. It's typically you're in between 4 and 5 weeks. I think it's been an industry-wide phenomenon this year that the automakers are looking to have a little bit more safety stock in the system. And so we did about 1 million units in Q1 resulted in safety stock increase, but still within normal levels. Where that goes from here, we don't really know. I think that it's with kind of supply chain tightness that's out there, we think that it stays at this level. There's always the chance that the Tier 1s want to manage inventory down at the end of the year and then replenish it in Q1, and we've kind of incorporated some of that potential in our second-half guidance, which is one of the reasons why it's a little bit below the first half. But I think normal what the customers wanted, and we'll manage it. We'll manage it as it comes.
But the good news is that you've sort of thought about this problem potentially and incorporated at least a lot of that in your guidance.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think you've heard. I was following earnings last week, and several auto suppliers had negative working capital related to this, where they're holding more inventory. And so there isn't always a chance that they wanted to kind of manage that down by the end of the year.
Great. Focusing on your next-generation set of products for Surround ADAS, you've had some pretty material wins over the last couple of quarters. Just sort of remind us a little bit as to how you expect those to ramp and what they importantly do to your ASPs, your base ASPs.
Yeah. So all three of the design wins that we have for Surround ADAS, which is a kind of one EyeQ6 High supported system that manages five or six cameras and a few radars, we have three design wins that all launch in 2028. You're talking between two and a half and three times kind of the average transaction price that we have today in our base ADAS business, which is around $46. Very good profitability, kind of similar margin profile to the base ADAS business, just at a higher price. It's representing kind of on average about 30%-40% of each of those automakers' volumes. That doesn't happen all in 2028, but as new vehicles launch and they get the system. And I think the trend in the industry is that this type of functionality, which is basically like hands-free on highways, incremental safety features to meet kind of upcoming regulations, is considered like a have-to-have. There's multiple ways to do it. Stellantis decided to do more of like a single front camera plus REM mapping instead of doing the full surround camera. That enabled them to get it up and running like in 2027. So there's different flavors, but even that program is very roughly equivalent profitability per unit to Surround ADAS. So yeah, I think we see a scenario where 30%-40% of our volume converts to this type of product over the next  4 or 5 years, which could drive ASPs into the $80-$90 range.
Interesting. And the margin profile is sort of the same?
Is similar percentage margin to the core business, which is in kind of the mid- to high-60s now. So yeah, in that range.
When potential customers or existing customers weigh Surround ADAS versus your other suite of advanced autonomous products, how are they making that decision? Can you just sort of help us unlock what the next incremental steps unlock from their capabilities?
Yeah. The interesting thing is that there are already a lot of like highway hands-free systems on the road, like commonly known as L2+. So Surround ADAS is really like the second generation. The first generation, most of them also have Mobileye kind of front camera systems, but with a lot of other or multiple other suppliers doing the radar and doing the driver monitoring and doing the parking software and maybe kind of an integration partner and, you know, the OEM with some role there. And because of that sort of multi-supplier architecture and kind of a lot of cooks in the kitchen, they're expensive. And, you know, maybe the performance isn't what it could be if you had really a focused system. And so our offer is actually a cost reduction for the customers mm-hmm. versus these sort of first generation systems. And like I said, you know, when you kind of have to have a product, you know, you want that cost to be as low as possible. You want the performance to be as high as possible. And so I think that that's the way I would characterize Surround ADAS. And, you know, because we have a very good kind of cost structure with the, you know, the inference chip, you know, vertically integrated, like we can provide that compelling cost. SuperVision is like what I would call L2++. So like a Tesla FSD type of system. There are not many of these on the road, like hardly any. And so you're talking, instead of like get on the highway and you can kind of take your hands off the wheel, take your foot off the pedals, like now you're talking about like get in your car in the driveway, plug in the address, the car drives you there. So I think that there's like much more uncertainty around kind of consumer willingness to pay. What's the value? What should the architecture be? Like what, you know, price level of vehicles it goes on? And that's leading to more of a, you know, it's not a have to have, it's like we need to try, or we need to have something going on there. And I think that that's leading to just a lot of, you know, different, it's not a clear competitive landscape. A lot of it is, you know, automaker self-development with, you know, on a kind of on an NVIDIA or Qualcomm chip. Some of it is like, let's go back to the five or six different suppliers, each contributing something. Cost really doesn't matter because it's only going to go on a few cars. So I think we're almost sort of in the SuperVision segment, we're almost kind of where the kind of highway hands-free segment, the L2+ segment was 5 years ago.
Interesting. And maybe just to remind us what the regulatory environment looks like that's compelling OEMs to make sure they have a Surround ADAS product, both in US and Europe.
Yes. So, you know, one of the things that's benefited Mobileye over the years is kind of the safety envelope, like what level of safety the car needs to provide, like what situations does the car need to deal with, is kind of constantly expanding. Europe is always the leader. You know, everyone else is usually a couple of years behind. And the 2029 European safety regs, or, you know, what has been published to the automakers as of about a year ago, is a bigger than normal jump. And it's including a lot of side view issues, like where you have to identify like a pedestrian, like to the side of the car that might be in the crosswalk, that makes it very difficult to do when you only have a front camera. You need side cameras. So like I said before, like there's a variety of kind of mixtures of how you could meet these requirements. But we think Surround ADAS is one of the kind of the mainstream ones.
And you mentioned REM too, which is a really important part of your product and what you're trying to build. Just maybe for the audience's sake, what is REM and why is it so important to your future product portfolio?
So REM is we crowdsource data from existing cars that have one of our chips and a front-facing camera. And it doesn't have to be any sort of special type of system, regular base ADAS system, but we pull data out of these cars to the cloud, data that is fully anonymized, but includes, you know, a lot of telemetry data about, you know, the curvature of the road, you know, where exactly the lane markings are, you know, where does the typical car stop, you know, next to a stop sign, you know, what is the common speed versus the legal speed, all of these kind of semantic details about human driving. And this can lead to a lot smoother performance, kind of better, you know, better comfort levels. Like, you know, picture you're coming up on a, you know, to a sharp curve, like the car understands that curve is coming before the camera can see it. It's also an amazing like AI prior, right? Because we can build simulators based on this kind of real road structure. We have about 8 million cars sending data consistently. You know, it's measured in the billions of miles.
Internationally too.
Internationally, yeah, US, Europe, you know, wherever there are, you know, Ford, Hyundai, you know, VW, BMW cars. Stellantis is starting soon as well. Mahindra starting soon as well. Like, we're getting data from that.
And what's interesting about it is that there's so many, and we'll talk about this later, emerging autonomous system providers, and they're a lot relying on simulation, but this is stuff that simulation can't really capture, I think.
I think that's right, because it's like, you know, the problem with simulation is always like, how realistic is it to the real world? So if you can create simulators where you kind of understand yield rules and kind of, again, back to like things like that seem trivial, but it's like, you know, If the line for the stop sign is too far back and you can't see around the corner because there's a bunch of trees there, then everybody's going to stop like 5 feet in front of the stop sign. So why do you have an autonomous car that stops like on the line and then has to creep forward? So trivial things like that, you can create like a much better experience if you have that understanding.
A bit of focus on Volkswagen, who is sort of the leading customer for some of your advanced autonomous solutions, including SuperVision and Chauffeur. Just sort of remind us of the timelines and when you expect SuperVision to roll out over the next couple of years.
Yeah, so SuperVision launches in the first Porsche vehicle in Q1 of 2027. The kind of the significant volume ramp will start to happen in the second half of the year, but like we'll have cars on the road in the first half of the year. You'll have kind of multiple models roll out, and kind of like we said at the kind of the announcement of the program a couple of years ago, like the intention is to ramp to around, you know, 300,000, 350,000 vehicles a year, probably like in year three. Chauffeur launches in the first half of 2028. Chauffeur is a level three system, so kind of full driver disengagement on the highway up to highway speeds. You know, day and night, you know, different weather conditions. So it should be really a kind of a full service, like, hey, I can watch a movie while I'm on the highway, while I'm on my commute. And then Drive, which is the AV, which is the robo-taxi system, we expect to have vehicles deployed without safety drivers by the end of this year in Florida.
And maybe just to focus a little bit on Volkswagen. There's a lot written about the company and what they're kind of going through with the competitive pressures that they're seeing. So how do you feel about your place in Volkswagen, the confidence level that you have that these products will get launched in 27 and 28 and beyond? And maybe, you know, broadly around what they're testing in terms of autonomy, autonomous solutions broadly.
So Volkswagen Group is adopting our entire product portfolio. So they're definitely an important customer. I think that the position we have with them was the result of like a lot of kind of internal investment that wasn't making progress. And I think that they kind of started earlier than others. So, you know, we continue to believe that, you know, we'll have more Volkswagens down the road, especially after we can show these cars on the road. I think that they're excited about it. Essentially, like every new vehicle that Volkswagen will launch for the next like 5 years will have some advanced like Mobileye technology within it. There's always like a lot of noise out of that company, and kind of they're very kind of cadenced in how they, you know, talk about products. Like they don't announce things like before the car's about to like, you know, go on the road. So I think the relationship is great. We've been executing very well. There's a huge amount of collaboration. Like, you know, we sometimes probably make it sound like, you know, it's kind of all us and, you know, we're developing these products. You just drop it into the car and go, but that's not the case at all. Actually, for supervision, there's 30,000 requirements that Volkswagen and Mobileye engineers work on together to get to kind of a fully validated product that'll launch early next year.
And maybe you can remind us what happens to so your traditional chipset sell for 47, it's around ADAS's multiples of that,
mm-hmm.
and then you have supervision, chauffeur, and drive. What are the price points, and how could that impact your P&L over the next couple of years?
Yeah, so think like Surround ADAS, think around $125. Supervision is around $1,300. Supervision will have a lower gross margin because we're delivering a kind of a full compute unit, not just the chips, but very high kind of selling price. Chauffeur is between $2,500 and $3,000. And then drive is kind of a different business model because
Right.
of robotaxi. So you're talking, $40,000, something like that. So excluding the robotaxi business, which will be lower volume, but it's hard to tell what the volumes will be. So excluding that, we would expect our average selling price with Volkswagen to double. I think that we said that at our analyst day like a year and a half ago, and it's still the case by around 2030. And that's on, 7 million units, something like that. So, very meaningful revenue growth.
It doesn't take a lot of volume to push to really impact the P&L in a positive way as these products launch over the next couple of years.
Exactly. Exactly.
Um,
yeah, and I think the OpEx is, we'll have OpEx growth, but we've been investing in these products heavily without much revenue for a few years now. So the operating leverage should be very strong.
In terms of the consternation that some of the OEMs are showing about adopting next-generation autonomous solutions, I think the test case has always been, well, how many people want Tesla FSD? And I think you'd agree we saw, at least what they've talked to us about, a significant jump in adoption
Mm-hmm.
of Tesla FSD. Have you seen any change in conversations with some of the OEMs after that was announced?
I think we are seeing some level of change there. It's really very crazy because I've said this before, the worst headline that I've ever seen out of many negative headlines over the last few years was there's some data scraping company that came out and said, Tesla just did a 30-day free trial for every one of their customers, and only 3% of people bought it. Because that really took a lot of the wind out of the sails of the automakers feeling like this was the product. Now it's what, 55% of new vehicles? And even on social media, which I ingest too much.
Me too.
It's like you've got all of these kind of stories about, people that really couldn't drive or, that really it's changed their life. So I think the value proposition, because it's always been you have to keep your eyes on the road. What's the big deal?
Right.
Right? But I think, automakers are starting to notice, it's starting to become clear that there's a huge amount of value there. And so, yeah, I think between us launching this product within Porsche vehicles and then Audi vehicles later in the year, being able to kind of fully demonstrate the production version of the system, it may lead to more traction. But I wouldn't say that, there's been any sort of huge change yet.
Right. Maybe to focus on your robotaxi business,
Mm-hmm.
which has very high ASPs. You're launching in conjunction with Volkswagen in a couple of markets. You've decided to go on your own path as well
Mm-hmm.
in terms of launching a robot. Maybe just for the audience, describe the dual path there and which cities you expect to launch in over the next 12 to 24 months.
Yes. So I think we made the decision, maybe 3 or 4 years ago that we should focus our robotaxi efforts on the technology itself and be a self-driving system provider, which means you're providing the compute, the chipset, the compute, the software. Maybe you're procuring the sensors and providing those as well. And so you're kind of creating this complete system. And Volkswagen was kind of the perfect customer because they want to install that type of system on a regular assembly line, which creates a lot of efficiency, which creates a lot of kind of scaling potential. And they have an ambition to deploy their own service, right, through a division called Moya, which has been like a kind of a car sharing outfit in Europe that has a good amount of users. And so this was kind of perfect because it created a lot of scalability. It allowed us to focus on the technology itself, and that's going really well. Like, Volkswagen expects to be deployed in five or six cities by the end of 2027, two in the U.S., L.A. and Orlando, and then, you know, four cities in Europe. And it's pretty far along. Like, they're doing kind of user group testing in Hamburg. Oslo just got their permitting done. You know, there's been on-road testing in all of these cities for the, you know, not all of them for multiple years, but some on-road testing for multiple years. The vehicle is now coming off the regular production line, so we were able to kind of validate the actual production vehicle. And the, you know, the technology is looking great. Like, we're meeting all the KPIs we need to meet to get to these milestones, which are essentially, you know, invite-only user group testing, and then open it up to anybody, you know, kind of test the end-to-end service. It's not just about the driving, it's about, does the app work? Do people know where the cars are? You know, is the routing system correct? And so I think we feel very good about this relationship and the way we're scaling. But as we got more comfortable with the KPIs and the technology, got to the point where we feel extremely confident about being able to remove safety drivers, as Waymo sort of led the charge and provided, like, a lot of data, like, a lot of data points on consumer demand. Like, consumers seem to be very open to getting in a car with no driver. Regulators have been generally supportive. Pricing has been good. Like, Waymo's generating over $100,000 per car per year, on only, like, 24 rides a day, which is, you know, we think the utilization could go much higher than that. So, you know, a lot more sort of, like, clarity around the business kind of drove us to decide to do a kind of an end-to-end vertically integrated service. I think that, you know, we've in the first city, which we have chosen but we haven't announced, in southeastern U.S., we will generate the demand on our own. I don't think that that's the end game, right? I think, you know, you could have cities where, you know, our division, Move It, has a good presence, and maybe it's small enough that you can generate a brand name pretty quickly. Like, I think you could see, you know, fully owned Mobileye services in multiple cities. Standing up a service like that, proving that it works, kind of proving that we have a kind of a handle on defining the product itself, allows us to go to market through other demand generators, I think, in a more powerful way than we can today. So I think that creates a lot of optionality for us. And it shouldn't be, you know, I think the funding is not, you know, it's not hugely material. Like, you know, first couple hundred cars, you know, maybe around $100,000 a piece, like, we can easily manage that within our cash flow. I think beyond that, as you start to scale, there's opportunities for securitized financing and off-balance sheet arrangements that we've been sort of exploring. So, you know, I think the OpEx is manageable for something like that. So, you know, we feel good about that decision, but there's, you know, a little ways to go. Like, we would expect to be in the first city kind of around the middle of next year.
We have about a minute left, and I have to ask about your humanoids. Which are really interesting and cool from the videos that I've seen. So what is Mentee? What's the end market for it, and how are you training it, and which data?
Yeah, I think Mentee, kind of they were built as kind of a fully vertically integrated, you know, designing everything from, you know, the compute and the software to the motors and the hands. Like, so full vertical integration allows you to really kind of have control of the product, AI first. So, like, no teleoperations. Like, the goal is to be able to train this robot, you know, with, you know, a few demonstrations, right? So it's important to be able to deliver a robot to a customer and then kind of let them do the training. The Mobileye synergies, you know, with Mentee are huge because we have, you know, a couple of decades of experience in sort of multimodal perception and intent-aware planning, and we have kind of access to massive amounts of data. We have huge simulators. Menti has a really kind of state-of-the-art sim-to-real transfer techniques. That's kind of part of their core technology that can move back into Mobileye. So we're already seeing like a lot of synergies with that business.
Right. Looks like we're up on time, but I warned you this was going to happen. I was doing riddles with my daughters this weekend, and I've decided to ask a riddle of the audience. Dan, you're welcome to participate if you can get it right. And whoever wins gets that wonderful CG Hydro Flask right there on that table. So here we go. I got to make this one good. I think this is okay. A man shaves several times a day, yet still has a beard. Who is he? He's a barber. That's who he is. Thanks, everyone. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, George. Great.